So the sound system got turned on. That was one step in that.
Mike's is working.
Oh, mine's on now. Maybe whatever you did over there fixed the connection.
You can't really see this the light on the side when you're looking. When you speak into the microphone, you need to turn this on.
Okay.
You're going to notice this little red light here and that there.
All right.
Good evening, everyone, from Gustavus City Hall. This is Mayor Taylor, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to our October 10, 2022 general meeting, as I call it to order. Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember van der Zanden.
I don't see him on the Zoom.
Councilmember Fur?
Here.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Here.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Here.
Mayor Taylor?
Here.
Councilmember Lewis?
Here.
Okay, I know Councilmember Sharman is not present tonight. Do we have Councilmember van der Zanden? All right, well, there are five council members present and a quorum exists.
Okay, thank you, Madam Clerk. We hope Councilmember van der Zanden can still join us at some point. We begin as usual with the reading of our vision statement. And I'd like to call on Councilmember Moskoviak, please, to read our vision statement.
We envision, sorry, I lost it on my screen here. We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain closeness, with and caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Thank you very much. Okay, reminding us what we are here for every time we meet. Before we move into swearing in new council member seats, I'd just like to take a second to thank our three departing council members, Bella Furr, Joe Vander Zanden, and Louis Sharman, who have served us with this distinction, and I very much appreciate their service in their time on the council. We have certificates for them. Bella is online, and the other two are not here, but Bella, this is yours. And we'll have it for you here in City Hall, as for the other two. So thank you all. And our certificate reminds us that how much we appreciate your service. And okay, our next next item is the swearing in of council members for seats A, B, and D. Oh, I should say one other thing. And that is to thank all of the people who ran for the council. And there were, you know, three others, of course, who didn't prevail this time. But they offered their service to their community, and they were willing to stick their neck out and run for council. And sometimes in the past, we haven't had people running for every seat. And this time, again, we did. And I want to thank them also for being willing to serve and standing for election. And that's part of what democracy is all about. And we win some, we lose them some, but that's what makes it work. So thank you guys too. It's really important. We move on to swearing in council member seats A, B, and D, and I'll call on Madam Clerk, please, to lead us through this process.
We'll have you stand and raise your right hand and repeat after me.
I, Shelley Owens, do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend the Constitution of the State of Alaska.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the State of Alaska.
And the ordinances of the City of the State of Alaska.
And the ordinances of the City of the State of Alaska.
And that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially.
And that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially
perform the duties of office of the office of council member to the best of my ability.
The duties of the office of council member to the best of my ability. And
Well, there we
go. Great, thank you. Welcome, Shelly.
I'll be signed with my special pen.
Invisible ink?
Yeah. Thank you, Shelly.
I, Janine Driscoll, do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend the Constitution of Alaska.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the State of Alaska.
And the ordinances of the City of Alaska.
And the ordinances of the City of the State of Alaska.
And that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially.
That I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially
perform the duties of the office of council.
perform the duties of the office of council member to the best of my ability.
And Brian, could you stand and raise your right hand for me?
Yeah, give me 1 second. I have to move my computer to a higher perch. Thanks for humoring me from a distance here. Right hand?
Right. I, Brian Taylor, do you solemnly swear?
I, Brian Taylor, do solemnly swear
that I will support and defend the Constitution of the State of Alaska.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the State of Alaska.
And the ordinances of the City of Gustavus, Alaska.
And the ordinances of the City of Gustavus, Alaska.
And that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially.
And that I will honestly, faithfully, and impartially
perform the duties of office of perform the duties of the office of the council member to the best of my ability.
Perform the duties of the office of a council member to the best of my abilities.
Great. And I will have your oath to sign when you return.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay, thank you, Madam Clerk, and welcome new council members. It's great to have you on board, and we've got work for you to do. Believe me. Okay, that takes us to election of mayor, and before I ask for nominations, I thought maybe if anybody wants to say anything about how they feel or ask anybody any questions or whatever, they could do that. I had a suggestion that we do something like that. So does anybody have any, I'll watch online here for hands to come up. Anybody have anything they want to say or ask or whatever? Okay, I'm not seeing anything coming up, so I guess we can move to nominations. And do we have any nominations for mayor?
This is Jim Miskovic. I'll nominate Mike Taylor for mayor. He's smart, hardworking, and respectful. I mean, you just can't miss with that combination. And if he'll do it, I'd certainly support it.
I second.
Okay, I would be willing to accept that nomination. Are there any other nominations for mayor? Okay, since we have only one nomination, are there any objections for nominee Mike Taylor to serve for the 2022 to 2023 term as mayor? Not seeing any objections. Okay. Hearing no objections, the nomination for Mike Taylor to serve as mayor for this next term is accepted by unanimous consent. So that moves us on to vice mayor. Do we have any nominations for vice mayor? Council member Lewis.
I will nominate Kyle Bishop for vice mayor if he wants to do it again. He's doing a great job.
I'll second that nomination. You can say whether you accept or decline the nomination, of course.
I just like to sort of preface with, you know, the next 6 months are going to be kind of just as busy as the last 6 months. So if everybody here is okay with that and my level of output, considering that stuff, I'm happy to continue to learn and work along Mike and learn the process a little bit more and engage as much as I'm able to. So that being said, if nobody has any objections to that, that is my level of commitment at the moment. The next 6 months is pretty crazy for me, but I do my best.
Thank you. Do we have any other comments or any other nominations for Vice Mayor? Okay, if, make sure I'm on my script here. Then are there any objections for nominee Kyle Bishop to serve the 2022 to 2023 term as Vice Mayor? Okay, hearing no nominations, hearing no objections, the nomination for Kyle Bishop to serve as 2022-2023 term has been accepted by unanimous consent. And thank you very much for being willing to serve again. It's a delight. I'm delighted to have you on the team. I guess then, Madam Clerk, we can move on to, we've covered that. Okay. Nothing else you need to declare on that. Okay, fine. So the next item is the approval of minutes, and Council Member or Vice Mayor Kyle Bishop has a motion for us.
Yeah, I move to approve by unanimous consent the 9/19/2022 general meeting minutes and the 10/3/2022 special meeting minutes.
I'll second that.
Okay, thank you. It's been moved and seconded to approve the 9/19/2022 general meeting minutes and the 10/3/2022 special meeting minutes, and as with unanimous consent. The minutes have been previously distributed. Do any members of the public wish to offer any additions or corrections to the minutes? We have a member of the public, Liz VanderZanden. Would you like to come to a microphone, please?
Okay, can you hear me all right? This is Liz VanderZanden. I'm a little nervous, so bear with me, but I would like the 9/19/22 minutes to be amended to include former Council Member VanderZanden's original motion concerning FY2303, as well as a second council comment and record of the vote as recorded. His motion reflects the desires of a large segment of our community. A fundamental principle behind Robert's Rules of Order is to give all members opportunity to have their voices heard and to protect the rights of all members. And this is the reason I would like the minutes amended to include his motion. On the special meeting of 10-3 and the work session, Council Memberman VanderZanden made it known to the council that he wanted his motion to be included in the September 19th minutes, and you did discuss it then. I don't think we have to make this too difficult. I don't see any reason why there should be a suspension of rules, as some have suggested. Suspension of rules has to do with meeting procedure. And what I've read, one needs to be extremely cautious when suspending the rules. The City Council has the authority to keep this simple and to the point. It's not unlawful. If this is a problem because we only post the motions of actions in the minutes, maybe we need to rethink this so motions reflecting other views can be recorded. In our Muni Code, it says that the city clerk is the parliamentarian, and she is a very good one. But it also says that the city council has hired the city clerk, and now she serves at the pleasure of the council. The council has the authority and the flexibility to do what seems reasonable for this immediate situation using common sense rather than a strict parliamentarian procedure. The council does not need to fear that this will start a precedent because it doesn't have to. If the council is in agreement with this, the motion can be made by any of you on the city council, and it can be as simple as, I move to amend the minutes to include council member Van der Zanden's original motion, which reads, I move to delete changes to section 5.60.010, contest of election, and section 5.60.020, notice of contest and procedure, and refer those sections to a future work session after the start of the new council year 2022-23 for further development. And I have a copy of that simple motion if you want to read it or if the clerk needs it. This would go a long, long way in showing that you, as the ruling council, are listening and hearing many people in the community. This segment of the public whom you represent want to have their voices heard in the minutes with this motion and details included. So I ask you, please amend the minutes in this way. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do any council members have a question for Ms. Van der Zanden? Okay, thank you. Are there any other members of the public who have any additions or corrections to offer, suggest for the minutes? Looks like Leah Oaken. Leah Oaken, you're on, please.
I second Liz Van der Zanden's feelings with this, and I feel that all opinions and motions should be written down and documented for public and for future use. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do any other members of the public have any additions or corrections to the minutes to offer? Okay, do any council members wish to make any additions or corrections to the minutes? And you may respond, if you wish, to the proposal from Ms. Van der Zanden. Yes, we can discuss, yes.
I would just like to open that up for council discussion if there has anybody has any thoughts on that, on how we feel about that. I know I kind of made my point last week when we opened it up for discussion initially and didn't really get any thoughts from anyone else on the council on how we should proceed.
Would you like to make a motion to that effect?
To include it?
Yes, if you'd like to, you may make that motion.
Sure, yeah. I would like to amend that. Should I read Liz's statement or just?
Does the clerk have the?
Well, I think Councilmember Lewis wanted to make a comment.
I was going to encourage that as well. I don't think we should try to, I don't think we can have it. What I understand about Robert's rules, we can't do this every time, but since it's important to several people now, I think we should, and take it by a case-by-case basis, but not necessarily overhaul. We can't overhaul Robert's rules, and it says very clearly that we don't include, you know, every motion that doesn't pass. However, this is an important one for the record, and I support amending it in this case.
Councilmember Owens.
I have a question. Was there a second to the motion?
You made a motion. Okay, right.
I mean, to Joe's motion.
I seconded it to open for discussion, yeah. Okay.
Well, you made the motion.
What do you mean, this motion? Right?
No.
No, this, to make this addition.
No, you not yet. We were waiting for
Tanya's
comment.
No, I was asking, was there a second to the motion that Joe made at this meeting?
Yes.
Okay, it was you, okay.
Yes. So,
Then I'd like to move to amend the minutes to reflect Joe Van der Zanden's amendment that did not make it and that was seconded. And I'll read it verbatim if we need to, but I think we know what we want to put in there.
And I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to include the in the minutes, Councilmember Van der Zanden's amendment. Maybe that's all I need to say. Okay. Is there any further discussion on this amendment to the minutes?
So this is Janine.
Councilmember Driscoll. Yes.
So just as we go forward, will we have some type of a criteria that we put to when we will follow this to put ones that fail into the minutes, or will it be a case-by-case basis, or will we develop some type of a criteria?
I guess I can respond to that since Mayor Taylor. I think our existing rules would prevail, but on a case-by-case basis, the council can move to essentially waive those rules or do something different or include in the minutes whatever they want, in my view. So I don't think that this necessarily sets a precedent or requires that we identify a procedure that's different. And I would also support the inclusion of Councilmember Van der Zanden's proposed amendment in the records out of respect for Councilmember Van der Zanden. And I know it means a lot to him and to others who supported the idea. So I would support it also. Any other comments from council members or additions or corrections to the minutes from council members? Okay, seeing none, Madam Clerk, I guess we'll have to have a roll call vote on the amendment.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes. Oh, wrong Taylor. We got to get used to that. Sorry, Brian.
Yes, me as well.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Makowiak?
Yes.
And I just noticed a problem with my minutes program because I don't have the new council members in there. So just a second here. Council member Owens?
Yes.
And council member Driscoll?
Yes.
Okay. Motion passes with all members in favor.
Thank you. Are there any objections to passing the 9/19/2022 general meeting minutes as amended and the 10/3/2022 special meeting minutes as presented by unanimous consent? Okay, seeing none, the motion is passed by unanimous consent. Okay, the next item on the agenda is Mayor's request for agenda changes. I have no request for reordering anything in the agenda. Does anybody else, any other council members wish to? Any other questions or any other requests for agenda changes? Okay. That takes us on to committee and staff reports. Well, let me stop on the agenda, on the agenda changes. The city administrator was signaling me she wanted to know when we listen to when we hear from Jeremiah Beckett and from Cordova Telephone Cooperative. And my thought was that he would comment on the at the time of the resolution. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to clear that up. Okay, so that takes us on to committee and staff reports. And our presenters know the drill on this. We try to keep the reports down to 5 minutes or so. And the council may ask clarifying questions of the presenter at the end of the presentation. So the first is from the Gustavus Volunteer Fire Department, the quarterly report from Chief Soule Martinez.
Hi, hello everyone. Welcome to the new city council members, and thank you for visiting me today. My report's mainly on papers on the fire conference up in Fairbanks I went to just a couple weeks ago now. But before I get into that most of the few months beforehand was in planning to go to the Fairbanks trip. We are getting to from our call season to our training season, where everyone's kind of winding down from their jobs and have more time to essentially train to further their volunteer career. So more or less planning on working on further providing more training. And also this next Sabbath Fire Conference. Without any further ado, not much changed from there. We did have a tremendous drop in calls with the lower season. So that's it's always nice, this more time. So with the conference here, couple weeks ago, the 2022 Fairbanks Fire Conference finally happened after 2 years of delay. It was canceled because of COVID the last couple of years, and this year it finally happened. This conference has been going on years. it's basically an assortment of different types of trainings. Every year it happens. Basically, a lot of fire departments get together. They listen to conferences, to people instructing different on different tactics, different gear, different views. So essentially, this is what I learned here. My first day, my first 2 days was during for the maintenance and repair. Thank you. Yeah, sorry, I forgot to print it out. So this actually helped quite a bit. I do feel a little bit more foundation to essentially say, yeah, we need a new water tender. Tinker two, if we put it through an inspection, yeah, we're not gonna pass. Granted, first responder vehicles do have a lot of exemptions in regards to what you a regular roadside vehicle has versus a first responder, mainly its weight. If we were to weigh engine one right now, we would probably be quite a bit overweight. But because it's a first responder vehicle, we're exempted from that. But there's other things that I'm worried about with Tinker 2 that we shouldn't be using it unless we're desperate. The next one was Wednesday opening session. From there, it was the official opening for the fire conference. We had some meetings with the fire chiefs, state Alaska fire chiefs, and then we moved to a rural fire chiefs meeting there, which actually is very, very beneficial, mainly because they were restructuring the rural training program for the state of Alaska is, and now they have four or five additional members to help provide training for the fire side of rural fire departments like ourselves. So I'm able to, I got their contact, the new contact able to provide training for us. And of course, there's also a vendor trade show where there's a couple of items on the list. So I'm working on to help, basically help the fire department run smoother. I will actually hope get a little more information on that and provide it to the council maybe on the next meeting. Next day was, now there was one classic about the community outreach, which I took. And from there, it was more along the lines how his fire department did community outreach and stuff. And I did learn a fair amount and different ideas, but it, I do feel like we do some of a pretty good job ourselves. And we always do more, but I think if it's for our community. Next one was a burn trailer class. It was more how to operate the burn trailer. And it's this new, basically a semi-container trip that has a simulated fire use of propane for rural communities that don't have capabilities of actually burning, doing live fire burns, essentially. And we can get on lists in a couple of years and hopefully maybe do a firefighter 1 and 2 class here, but it's gonna take a couple of years, and also planning of getting live burn instructors and stuff like that. So I'm gonna see about working with the Park Service as well to see if we can combine our departments with that. The next class was actually extremely beneficial. Does your training meet the standards? They go over the two people that were discussing in that class was discussing their fire department ways, but it kind of opened my eyes a little bit of like how we should run our department here. And we are running our fire department with standards, but I would like to get it at least on paper and also start following, I guess, a checklist of stuff. So make sure, so when we do apply for grants and they ask like, how do you get new volunteers? How do you provide training? Well, I got the paper here and I can show it to them. The one class that unfortunately that I did sign up for, but it got moved to another class, was the grant writing class. Unfortunately that was moved to a day where actually it was on my maintenance day, so I couldn't attend. Did talk to the guy a little, the instructor there did talk a little bit in the rural fire chiefs a little bit. He also mentioned that the EFG grant may not actually work for us just because of the lack of firefighter 1s and 2 training in our fire department. Still might worth applying, but we may not get it just because of that. I do want to thank the city for allowing me to attend this conference, and for Johanna as well to go. And I'm actually looking forward to next year. This is happening again in Valdez in the fall. So I'm hoping to attend and hopefully have more volunteers go as well, as this is a very beneficial conference. It helps me make connections to other fire chiefs and other communities, meet their other instructors, and also to get more, and also provide more training for everyone as well.
Any questions for Chief Martinez from any council members? I have just a quick one. I want to make sure I understood. Did you say that the Assistance Firefighters grant, AFG grant, is not available if we don't have qualified firefighter 1 or firefighter 2?
So yeah, department? As of right now, they actually are reworking their grants of service to make it more to meet the minimum standards of the state. So which means that rural firefighting would then qualify.
Okay.
But as of right now, this year, majority of the fire department has to be trained at the firefighter 1, 2. They're not going to give you money to essentially purchase something that you're not trained on. on paper, even though we technically would be trained on the new fire engine on paper or officially where it wouldn't be.
So it's an encouragement for us to get more of our firefighters qualified as firefighter one or two.
Yeah, and yeah. I do realize that right. Travis had issues with that in the past, trying to get firefighter ones to training. Right.
So we'll keep doing that. And I, for one, am willing to support that training for our firefighters. So having been in the department, I know the value. But the rural firefighting class is a real good one. As we remember, you and I were both in it together once. And so doing that one first, it really hits the basics. So we should try to make that happen too.
Yeah, and again, talking to the World Fire Conference, Jarvis, I forgot his last name, but he's the contact here. I'll be out talking to him about seeing about getting another training, actually maybe becoming an instructor myself as well. Sure. So
okay, any other questions again, council members, for Chief Martinez? Okay, thank you, Chief. So we move on to the Marine Facilities Coordinator Quarterly Report, and Ben Sadler, I believe, is online to give us a report on marine facilities. Ben?
Yes, hi, everyone. First, I'd just like to welcome the new council members and say thank you for volunteering to help with our community, and I'd like to thank the outgoing council members for all the work that they did. And as far as my report goes, the only thing I'd really like to add to the written report is that we're trying to get the wooden floats moved up into the river right now. The weather is obviously not cooperating, and currently I'm in Juneau, but I will be back in a few days. We'll continue to work towards that. And we're working with DOT and Joe van der Zanden to try to find a temporary home or a new home for the steel float for the winter. And we've got DOT coming out hopefully this week to look at our plans and look over in Bull Moose Cove and see how they can help us over there. If anyone has any questions, I'll add more. And if not, that's all I have.
Any council members with questions for Marine Facilities Coordinator Ben Sadler? Okay, thanks. And thank you, Ben, for, and also to outgoing council member Joe van der Zanden for working so hard to find a solution for the steel float dilemmas that we've had that have seemed so intractable. And I think we're on the way to solving that with their good work. So thank you, Ben. Okay, we'll go on to the City Clerk Quarterly Report next, please. Madam Clerk.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I don't have really anything to add to my report. I do want to express my appreciation to all our outgoing council members, our current council members, and our new council members. It's a big volunteer job, and it's really appreciated to have a full council. If there's anything that I can do to help each of you get started and up to speed, reach out to me and I'll help you wherever I can. Let's see here. Now, as you already know that I review Title V each year for the elections. And I will be doing that again in preparation for next year. And I plan to take a closer look at the contested election section, as well as introduce a new section, which our code is missing, addressing write-in candidates. So look forward to any comments you guys have on those. The only other thing I guess I have two things. We have early voting starting for the general election here at City Hall, and that'll begin on October 24th and go until November 7th. The general election is on November 8th. And let's see, I recently had the opportunity to take an introductory QuickBooks training class, which was really awesome. and it gave me a little insight on what our treasurer does. I wanted to thank Kim Nay. She actually made it possible for me to take this class, as well as the mayor and the city administrator. They were helping handle in-person early voting for 4 days while I took that class. So it was kind of a crazy time to be taking a 4-day class during elections, but without their help, it wouldn't have been possible. So thank you very much for your support there. And I don't really have anything else to add to my report, but if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Any questions from any council members for our clerk on her quarterly report? Seeing any hands coming up. Madam Clerk, let me thank you for an exemplary job in running our municipal election again this year. It went very smoothly. It's actually a lot more complicated than a lot of people may appreciate, and making it possible for all those people, some 90 or more that did early voting, or close to that, I guess, plus running the show at the polls. It takes a lot of organization, and I really appreciate the leadership of our clerk and Kim Nay, who served as a leader of the election officials team, and also all the rest of her volunteers. So, but thank you, Madam Clerk, for organizing that so well. It went very well, and I appreciate it. Okay, that takes us on to the next report, which is, City Treasurer, and we've had Ben Sadler sitting in the city treasurer's chair here as we are recruiting for a new treasurer to fill that position. And Ben's been doing a fabulous job in there, keeping all the checks going and the accounts up to date. Ben, did you have some comments on the monthly financials at all?
No, Mike, I don't have anything to add. The reports are there. If someone has questions, I'll try my best to answer them without having the information in front of me, but I don't have anything written or planned to say on the matter.
Sure. Okay, well, the story is really there in the profit and loss statement in the packet. It shows how we're doing. I would encourage every council member to peruse that just to know where we are at this point in the fiscal year and get a feel for how we're doing financially. But looks to me like we continue to do very well. Ben, I should ask the council members, I think Ben's gonna have to bow off a line here. Was there anything else you wanted to ask Ben, either again, marine facilities or the financials? Okay, thanks, Ben. Appreciate you tuning in from afar.
Thank you, Mike.
That takes us to the city administrator's general meeting report. Madam City Administrator.
Good evening and welcome to the new council members and returning council members. Great to have everybody here. So I apologize, this wasn't in the in written format in your packet. It's been a busy time. So this reporting timeframe has been particularly busy with the departure of the treasurer. I've had to become familiar with many aspects of those duties and systems and sort out various tasks and priorities. And it's a large but not yet complete task to update bank accounts and credit card access, along with updates to be able to access grants, portals, and agency contacts and other responsible entities have all had to be upgraded and redone since the departure of the treasurer, so that we can continue to do our business. For example, we had to complete an online enrollment process before being able to draw down federal funds from Grandpa's Farm Road project, and I'm still waiting to hear from the Treasury that we've got accepted to do that. So it's a long process just to get those through those things. But some of the starting is easing up thanks to Ben, who has stepped up in an acting treasurer capacity. And with Phoebe's excellent tutelage, he's doing a yeoman's job, and he's continuing his Marine Facilities Coordinator's duties during this time as well. So we really want to thank him for stepping up and Phoebe for being willing to come back yet again to help us out. We updated the DRC waste disposal ordinance to include with very specific language regarding the septic holding tanks. This is before you for approval tonight. Even with the approval, a permit will need to be obtained from ADEC, which should not be problematic. And additionally, we will have to secure an agreement with Juno Septic. So it's not a done deal. We just have to put the pieces into place so we can get there if we can do it. John Barry, who we've contracted with to provide technical assistance with engineering and project matters, was just in Juno and he went and looked at the proposed tanks. He reports that the tanks are in good as new condition, except for four small holes in the outer shell of one tank caused by rocks, probably during extraction. These holes can be easily repaired and the walls are far sturdier than needed for storing septage because they're double walled. So this is the best plan so far presented to the city to date. It's feasible without any obvious issues regarding permitting, cost, logistics, or installation. I've got John's full report. If anybody would like a copy, I can forward it. He's also provided us a report on the five options presented by P&D Engineering for the Good River Bridge Project and bank stabilization piece, and then provided the city with his recommendations on which option is the best and most viable and cost conscious. We've settled for option number two with incorporating the riprap piece of suggestion one to make it a most secure option. So then the next step was the call for proposals or notice of intent to apply has been made public for Alaska DOT's Community Transportation Program and Transportation Alternatives Program. So I just submitted the basic information for the Good River Bridge Repair and Embankment Stabilization into their project intake survey. That begins the process of allowing both DOT and Alaska Municipal League, who their executive director, Niels Andreasen, was here today talking to us about it. And this will help the applicant sort out prospective funding sources. It's just sort of like a repository where everybody puts their information in and then they try to detail you to where you can go for funding. It's also considered our notice of intent to apply. This intake process will determine which federal grants and state programs the project may be eligible for. And I've been in contact with our grant writer at Alaska Solstice to determine, she's on board to help us write a grant proposal for infrastructure, other funding once the source is identified. We worked on both the resolutions updating policy and procedure for submission of small grant proposals and the policy and procedure on submission of grant proposals and capital requests. Those are before you today for hopefully for approval. You will see Jeremiah Beckett. I communicated with him and Sarah Catherine with the Cordova Telephone Cooperative regarding the USDA Reconnect grant application, the resolution of which is also before you tonight. We submitted drawings and information to the Solstice grant writers for both the DRC new compost building and recycling facility. And we'll reach out to other agencies to see what other resources there are to fund these projects. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation and the SWAT group is aware of these and they've already endorsed the compost facility project. It's of the opinion of Olivia Pfeiffer at Solstice that sometimes it's better to combine the request into one large project. The likelihood of funding may be better. So if we were to combine both the compost facility and the recyclable facility and the slab, we might have a better chance of a big one ticket item to get funded. So just the way things are going right now with the infrastructure stuff. We walked the ditches of Willow Way and Pine with the road contractors to see where the overflowing was occurring and causing maintenance road issues for the whole area. We discussed what might be done to resolve the issue. The contractor says the fix appears to be fairly minor and simple, but consensus by residents, not so much. It will take some planning and coming together of local residents to correct the issue. I wish to reiterate to the council, especially to new members who may not have heard this last meeting, but that we need to plan and be ready with necessary project outlines and design documents so we can be competitive in applying for infrastructure funding, because this is not going to come around again in a hurry, probably. And we may have to spend some money to reap the benefits of obtaining funding for larger scale projects, such as a dock breakwater or a bike path or composting and newer DRC. These funds are being allocated and we don't want to wait till something gets to critical mass to have to deal with infrastructure breakdowns that we either can't handle or are forced to manage at the FEMA level. So we might have to spend some money to be proactive, but there's new people here and I've been to some of these infrastructure summits and people are climbing on top of it to get their projects done. So I don't have anything else, comments or suggestions from anybody.
Thank you. It's been another busy month for our city administrator. And I can tell you she's hardworking and I'm so glad she's on the job. and I'm also glad to have John Berry serving us on a consulting basis to support our project management. And with the help of those two, we're going to be able to qualify, I believe, for a lot more funding opportunities than we would have been able to otherwise. So do any council members have a question for our city administrator? Yes, Council Member Owens.
Thank you. Two questions. One is the grant proposal for smaller grants, $15,000 limit, changing that. I think that the whole process of streamlining and updating is good one. And I was just wondering how that dollar amount for smaller grants came about.
Well, for one thing, the library had applied for a community something, I don't know the exact acronym, but they didn't even know this policy was in place. And it was what they were doing their camps with and their various activities with kids. And they had originally applied for a $15,000 grant, they only got 10. And I looked around and looked at a bunch of small grants. And that seems to be a threshold that with money, the way it is nowadays and the value of things, that's a small grant. Mm-hmm. And if it's not a capital project that requires a whole lot of design and planning, then we want to encourage the departments to apply for grants, not have to come to us and wait 2 months. They did this with, it was due in 3 days and they got money to help with the community. So having to come to us for something that small, when they could just show it to us or the mayor, we can look at it. The treasurer can tell if it's going to be intensive or too intensive for us. So the $15,000 threshold is about where we want to be with that. And anything over that then would have to come to council.
Okay. My second question is, on the infrastructure funding, would we go through the capital improvement scoping process for individual projects, or is there some other way that we would be evaluating projects?
I think the ones we're moving forward right now are already part of our capital improvement mm-hmm. plan. If we want to add other ones to it, we have to, or reprioritize them, then we would have to go through that process again.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for our city administrator from the council? It looks like, okay. Council Member Taylor.
Yes, the member, not the mayor. I was just wondering if you could provide me a little bit of commentary, speaking to the resolution that's on the agenda tonight from Cordova Telecommunications Cooperative and their Reconnect grant application, because I know that one of the service provider in town Fiber Alaska is also applying for this same grant. And if I'm mostly curious if you had worked with the local provider or if there was any, you know, I'm assuming these grant applications are technically in competition with each other and what the rationale was there, or if you can speak to that process and how that kind of came about. It struck me as odd that the local company wasn't getting support from the city.
Well, it's not that they're not getting support from the city. It's that the timeliness and the completeness of the request to do so was like 3 minutes before the packet was being formulated to be put out. And the Cordova folks had done it 2 weeks prior and it had been already on our work session. I suggested that they come tonight and talk on non-agenda items. And I also suggested they could request a special meeting in which we could also approve support for them. It's not that nobody wants to, that the support isn't there. It's that the completeness of the ask was just wasn't there to even get on the agenda. It was just sort of an 11th hour pop in and ask us to do it kind of thing. And one doesn't overshadow the other. I think when you hear from Jeremiah tonight, you'll hear that they have been working with them as well. So it's not for lack of support. It's the timeliness in which it all occurred.
Right. Awesome. Great. Thanks for that.
Does that?
I appreciate.
I'd suggest we can explore further during when we actually have the resolution before us. That'd be a good time to talk about.
Yeah.
It. Yeah.
And expand on that.
One thing that I forgot to mention, if that's okay, is now that I know you're technologically very adept, and I know some other people have talked to me about this, and I would like to, you know, really see us get a little work group together, just because to update our policies and to look at things that happen around town, like, you know, people like ditch digging and where things are located. And we need people with technological savvy to help advise us. And I know she a former council, Susan Warner, she former council member, and she's very, you know, knowledgeable about those things. I know Whitney Rapp is very knowledgeable about those things. And I know you are, Brian. And I would just like to see a work group get together to go over some of these things and advise us on them.
I would be very
any open. Other... Thank you. Any other questions for our city administrator from council members? Okay, thank you. That concludes our reports from staff and so forth. Takes us on to public comment on non-agenda items. This public comment period is for non-agenda items only. It's not intended for discussion. The council may ask clarifying questions only, but we don't get into back and forth with or discussions on these things. So if you would like to make a public comment on a non-agenda item at this time, if you're in the room, raise your hand, but otherwise participants online can click the participant icon and then the hand icon to raise your hand. If you do not have that option, unmute your phone. The clerk will add you to the list and remute you until it's your time to speak. Please state your full name when speaking and refrain from speaking if your comments have already been addressed by another speaker. Please do not use profanity, of course, and be respectful in your comments. You'll have an opportunity to comment here and then again at the end of the meeting when we have a second public comment on non-agenda items. So do any members of the public have a comment on a non-agenda item at this time? And here in the room, we have Liz Vanderzander. Liz, please step to the microphone.
I'm Liz Vanderzander, and I would like to put in a word for our local internet providers, Byte Networking, doing business as Fiber Alaska. Last week, the council received an email from Byte Networking asking for your support in seeking federal funding through the SDA ReConnect grant. And I hope all the new council members, that could be forwarded on to them as well. It had all the information from them. They would very much appreciate your support in applying for this grant. I would like to ask you to give them your support as well as the Cordova Telephone Cooperative. I don't perceive any conflict here. No matter who's awarded the grant, Gustavus will benefit. A local receiving the grant could even cut out the middleman when the time comes to connect to the submarine fiber optic cable. So whatever is needed to give them your support, even if it does involve a special meeting, I truly hope you will do so and in a timely manner. So thank you.
Thank you. Any council members with a question for Liz Vanderzander? Not seeing any hands come up, but thank you very much, Liz. Do any other members of the public have a comment on a non-agenda item? Our Chief Martinez wishes to speak.
There's more, I forgot to mention in my report, but the COVID testing hours did change this month. It is Monday, Thursday, and Saturday, 12 to 3 p.m.
Okay, thank you. And thanks for keeping that program going for us. It's not every community has that service, and we're lucky to be able to do it. Any other comments from the public on a non-agenda item? Looks like Leslie Sirstad may wish to speak. Leslie, please come to the microphone. We're always glad to hear from you.
Okay, this is Leslie. I do have first I'll start off with a couple of questions. Mayor Taylor, when did the City Hall get last upgraded and made what I call spiffy? You know, really comfortable, really a nice office for a small town. When did that happen? The last time.
We're supposed to only ask questions, but I'll put it this way. Are you aware it was back when I was mayor the first couple of times?
No.
So it was about 2016 or 17 that we did the addition.
Okay, that's good.
So
roughly how much time and effort went into it? How much expense went into it? Because it's nice for us. It's nice.
Again, I'll have to say I don't recall the amount that of the project, maybe a couple hundred thousand or less than that.
Okay.
We got a very good value from our local contractor.
It's nice to have local contractors. So, yes. Yeah, thank you. Okay, well, I think it's nice, and it's nicer than it was before. Before it was dry and it was comfortable, but it's even nicer. Well, it's
nice.
And we
have a bathroom.
Pardon?
And now we have a bathroom.
And now you have a bathroom. That's right. You have a treasurer's room and you have office or something and a nice office over here and space for you all and lovely furniture. May I throw in here that it is awfully nice to see everybody here. Real people in here. Each one that you can communicate back and forth and pass things on and whatever you want to do. I really encourage you to use your office and encourage the city to come in and see you and maybe communicate a little bit with you. It's nice to go to the coffee shop, that's true. But it is a nice place. It's a nice city hall. And I appreciate that you're using it and I encourage you to keep using it.
Any questions for Leslie Sirstad from the council? Clarifying question. Well, thank you very much, Leslie, for your comments. Are there any other public comments on a non-agenda item? Looks like Leah Oaken has one online. Leah?
Thank you. So this is Leah Oaken. I'm speaking on behalf of the Gustavus Fizes Association. It was drawn to my attention this summer about the graffiti that's underneath the bridge. And coming from a visitor association standpoint, for the visitors that are fishing, particularly in some of the activities that go down the river and under the bridge, it's an unsightly scene that's been created. And it is the DVA's intention to work with some of the local artists, and I've communicated with some of the local artists about getting together some of the kids and creating a mural that's that goes on both sides of the underside of the bridge. So I just wanted to let the city council and any members of the public that are listening know that that is in the works, and we're hoping to spend more time getting that together and the kids together and the local artists together and working on that in the spring. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any council members have a clarifying question for Leah Oaken? Councilmember Owens.
Thank you, Leah. Which bridge are you referring to?
I believe Mr. Taylor answered that question, but for the speaker, loudspeaker, the Salmon River Bridge, right there beside City Hall, the Salmon River Bridge.
Yes, the graffiti were on the bridge abutment underneath the bridge, so, and was cleaned up this summer by DOT. Yeah. So it was a nice correction. Our city administrator has a question or a comment.
Just Leah, I think that's a great idea. I just want to make sure, are you working with DOT on this project? Because they have control of the bridge. It's their bridge. So you have to make sure whatever you're doing, you might want to run it by Jeff.
Jeff Jarvis.
Yeah, Jeff Jarvis. Just pointing that out before you go to a lot of trouble, you might want to. I mean, it's a good idea, but I would check with him first.
Thank you for that. Yes, I have spoken to Jeff Jarvis. I spoke directly straight after I had spoken to you, and Jeff thought it was a great idea. And then I went and spoke to the local artists, and they thought it was a great idea. So the hope is that if the kids create their own art under there, that then it'll lessen the likelihood of other unseemly artwork to be created over the top of that. But yes, I have spoken to Jeff and DOT, and they're on board with it. Thank you.
Thanks, Leah.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any other public comments on non-agenda items? Okay, seeing no hands coming up, we'll move on. We have nothing on the consent agenda for tonight. And so that brings us up to ordinance for public hearing. These are items that are code changes or either non-code ordinances for financial purposes. Actually, both of them are non-code ordinances for financial items. And they were introduced at the last meeting. For those of you who may be unfamiliar, when we have a code item that requires a public hearing, we introduce it at one meeting, usually at a general meeting, and then schedule it for public hearing at the next general meeting, unless we have to schedule it earlier in a special meeting. But in this case, they were scheduled for this meeting for public hearing after being introduced to the public last month. So the first item is FY23-05 NCO. It's the AMLIP Gravel Pit Fund. This one is a routine item. We have in our operating budget every year a deposit that we make to our gravel pit fund that we use to build up funding to support improvements with the, on the gravel operation. Say we want to change our model there. If we had to buy a loader or drag equipment or something, then we've got funding to address that. Or if we needed to expand by purchasing more land, that sort of thing could be done. So we make that routine $6,000 transfer from our operating budget. So it's coming from revenues from this year to the gravel pit fund. And actually, that's the amount we're transferring is something less than we actually receive in our gravel sales. So we're moving a substantial part of the sales into savings each year by this. So so that's the description of what we're doing. The time is 8:15, so I would open the floor to public testimony on this item if anybody in the public would wish to testify, support or not. Okay, I'm not seeing any public hands come up on this item. It is rather routine, I admit. We'll close public hearing at 8:16, and I'll open the floor to council members for. Let's see. Hang on a sec. Get my schedule here done right. I think the next thing that we need to do is have a motion before or from council member, and I believe council member Lewis has a motion for this item.
I move to make a motion to approve FY23-05 NCO AMLIP Gravel Pit Fund introduced on 9/19/2022.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve FY22-05 NCO, the AMLIP Gravel Pit Fund, as introduced September 19, 2022. Do any council members have any comments on this item? Okay, I'm seeing none. We'll move on to a vote. Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call vote, please?
Councilmember Makowiak?
Yes.
Councilmember Brian Taylor?
Yes, thank you.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Motion passes with all members in favor.
Thank you. That takes us on to item 12 in the agenda, FY23-06 NCO. This capital project funding for 2023 for the Hardin Beach Trail. And this will move from our AMLIP long-term savings that we have in place we have set aside for capital to draw from for capital improvements. And it will move $43,000 for this project as described in the scoping document to fund the construction of the Hardin Beach Trail, which and the improvements at the campfire pit out there to make it easier for people if they have limited mobility to make it out to enjoy the view from the bench there or enjoy activities at the fire pit. So do any members of the public have a comment on this non-code ordinance? Oh, I'm sorry, I should have said that we were opening public hearing at 8:19 for that. Okay, I guess seeing no hands raised, we'll close it at 8:19 and move to council comments and motions on this. And I believe we have a motion scheduled from Council Member Muscoviac.
I move the council approve ordinance FY23-06 NCO and ordinance for the City of Gustavus providing for the amendment of the city held accounts in fiscal year 2023.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second that motion.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve FY23-06 NCO Capital Project Funding 2023 Hardin Beach Trail as introduced September 19, 2022. Do any council members have any comments on this action item? Okay, seeing no hands come up, I guess it's pretty straightforward. Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call vote, please?
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Brian Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Muscoviac?
Yes.
Motion passes with all council members in favor.
Thank you. We've got an hour and just over 20 minutes in our meeting. And without objection, I'd like to call for a 5-minute break. And we will reconvene at, well, let's make it about 8:25 or so. And that'd be about 6 minutes or so. I've got 8:19 on my phone. Okay, I'll call our meeting back to order after our break, everybody, please. And we are now into new business. And for our new business, we start, it's a little different than we did in the last section where we are doing public hearings on items that have been introduced before. New business usually includes resolutions that we are adopting or motions to do something or the introduction of a code item that's going to be scheduled for public hearing later. And in this section, we begin with a motion from the council and the clerk has scheduled council member in the cheat sheet to make a motion on each one of these. So that's how we proceed on this section. So the first one is resolution CY22-21, a resolution in support of the Cordova Telephone Cooperative USDA Reconnect grant application. Oh, and by the way, there is a point for public comment on each of these. It's just a little farther down after we make the motion. So and read the resolution. So council member, I should note here that we started preparing for this with a suggested resolution submitted to us from the Cordova Telephone Cooperative. And that was originally in the packet that was put out in with the notice of this meeting last Wednesday. I have generated some edits to that and ask the council member making the motion to move a substitute with those edits rather than the one that was originally in the packet. The content is pretty much the same. It's just a little bit of wording changes to reflect our policies and so forth. Yes, you could. Councilmember Lewis, may we have a motion from you on this one, please?
I move to adopt CY22-21 resolution in support of the Cordova Telephone Cooperative USDA Reconnect grant application as revised by Mayor Taylor.
Okay, do we have a second? Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve resolution 22-21 resolution in support of the Cordova Telephone Cooperative USDA Reconnect grant application as revised. And the council members all have a printed copy of it in front of you, and it's also on the screen. I did the changes, the edits and track changes. So that's hence the cross out and red lettering there. So Councilmember Lewis, would you be so kind as to read the resolution then with the, if you can read through all the edits,
sure.
I didn't realize it's a little awkward.
I will try. Resolution CY22-21, a resolution in support of the Cordova Telephone Cooperative USDA Reconnect grant application. Whereas the City of Gustavus supports initiatives that improve the quality of life for citizens of the community, including access to affordable and reliable broadband internet. And whereas Cordova Telephone Cooperative, CTC, is seeking federal funding via the USDA Reconnect grant that will provide access to submarine fiber optic cable for the community of Gustavus, Alaska. And whereas CTC's grant application, Fish in Seek, Southeast Alaska, fiber internet serving homes in Southeast Alaska, is intended to provide wholesale opportunities to increase community connectivity and reduce broadband costs within Gustavus. And whereas the city, Gustavus City Council believes that the project, if funded, is in the best interest of Gustavus, its citizens, its businesses, local providers, and the future of the community. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Gustavus City Council supports the efforts of Cordova Telephone Cooperative as reasonably necessary to validate land ownership, easements, environmental reviews, and other documentation for the City of Gustavus if CTC receives the USDA Reconnect grant. Be it further resolved that the Gustavus City Council encourages CTC's USDA Reconnect grant application. Be it further resolved that the City of Gustavus will issue civil work permits with conditions to CTC to perform construction on city property and in city maintained easements in consultation with the city as necessary to connect Gustavus to regional fiber optic infrastructure. Be it further resolved that this resolution shall remain in effect without limitation until such time as it has been expressly rescinded by the City of Gustavus, and be it further resolved that the officers and employees of the City of Gustavus have the authority to take all action necessary to carry out the intent of this resolution.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we can open the public comment, but I'd like to begin with asking Jeremiah Beckett to come to the microphone and give us an introduction to the proposal here that their company, his company, has made.
Hi, I'm Jeremiah Beckett from Cordova, Alaska. I want to thank the council for allowing me here tonight and entertaining our requested resolution. I grew up in Cordova and moved back about 10 years ago because they got fiber internet. They brought a fiber optic to Cordova and it allowed me to telework and work remote. And so since that time, I've kind of shifted my focus to help my community grow and increase their broadband and their telecom services. And so about 5 years, I started working for the co-op. And with that, we've been exploring grants with the USDA and different government programs to introduce fiber to our community, to connect our neighbors, and to help drive down the cost of our internet. So we were the first Alaska company to get a USDA Reconnect grant about 4 years ago. We got $19 million to build out fiber in Yakutat, Alaska. And so we've been actively there this summer building out fiber, and we're connecting them with a microwave network to Cordova. And so they'll have non-satellite based internet for the first time in 2 summers. We've also secured a grant for the village of Chiniga right next door to Cordova to build out fiber for them and the connecting to our network. And then most recently, we've got a $22 million grant to build out Cordova and do what's kind of occurring here right now, overbuilding our copper with fiber optics. This also includes a new submarine line to connect Cordova to Seward so that we have 2 lines and we don't have a single point of failure leaving our town. With the latest program, we saw an opportunity to connect Cordova and Yakutat down to Juneau. The price of internet down here is about 1/6 what we pay. So our community pays over $60,000 a month for internet. And if we can get down to Juneau, we can drop that considerably on our monthly cost to our community. We're a co-op member owned, so we're not for profit. Everything we do is for our membership to help our members. And so we're always looking for ways to decrease costs and improve efficiencies. And the opportunity to come down south, going Cordova to Yakutat to Juneau, we pass multiple communities. And so we don't want to just connect without creating the opportunity to connect those communities well. So I'm here this week to visit your community. I'll be in Pelican and Hoonah as well. We have similar support from those organizations and communities. And right now we're applying for a $35 million grant. We're planning to match that with $12 million, so it will be roughly a $47 million project to connect Cordova, Yakutat, Gustavus, Pelican, Hoonah, and Juneau. We did not include building out fiber here because you already have multiple providers. One of them is actively deploying fiber in your community, has another different type of USDA grant, and so we've reached out to them to let them know what we're doing and would like to collaborate with them, but we do not intend to build fiber to the home here. That would be up to the local providers, Byte or Fiber Alaska, ACS, to service you. Our hope is that we can provide cost-effective transport to help give you the similar type of pricing that we enjoy in rural Alaska, where it's similar to urban rates and speeds. And so we don't need the resolution for our grant technically, but our history has shown us the more sprinkles we put on the application, the more we stand out. In the last 3 grants we've done, we've been in the top 5% scoring in the nation. So I know for a fact we'll have the highest scoring application in Alaska with what we're doing, and we have a really high potential for success. One of the big benefits to your community of getting the submarine, whether it's through us or any partner, is that the transport is faster and more scalable. So when you look at things of how can we improve our cellular coverage in the harbors or places that we hike and our community lives and plays, having that fast, cheaper transport is going to allow some of those cellular carriers like AT&T, Verizon, GCI to deploy more cell sites to give you better coverage. It's going to allow your school to get faster internet connection, your city. There's lots of different programs that also build on this. So later on, if you want to apply for grants to, let's say, upgrade your school with smart boards and laptops for all the kids, or making sure that all the elders in the community have access to an iPad and a smart TV so they can utilize the internet, there's a lot of programs you can build on this as well. So we're appreciative of you letting us come here. The resolution's pretty generic. And I did bring a flyer. We didn't have a chance to send it before we came, but I'll leave some hard copies with you. It just kind of has our executive summary of what we're doing. It'd be roughly 3 to 4 years to deliver here, 1 year in design, and then manufacturing of the lines and then construction. So we'd be looking at 2025, 2026 at the latest. That's kind of a summary of who we are, what we're doing. And we really appreciate your time and consideration for letting us join you tonight.
Thank you. Do we have questions from council members for Mr. Beckett on this proposal? Councilmember Owens has a question.
Thank you. My first question is, you referred to fiber backhaul. And I was just wondering if you could explain what that is.
Sure. So in Alaska, we have three general types of backhaul for communications. We have satellite, which is how the whole state started when AT&T started placing earth stations all around. And those are very large dishes that communicate in outer space and back down. Then came the invention of the microwave network. And right now, most of the Southeast Alaska is serviced by microwave. It's significantly faster than satellite, but there's only so much spectrum down here on ground. And so eventually all that gets utilized. And right now in the Southeast, there is a capacity scenario with the microwaves. They can only give so much bandwidth per community. And with fiber, it's using lights and it's a physical connection. And it goes thousands of times faster and more scalable. So it's a future-proof solution that you won't be limited by a spectrum and what's out in space.
Okay. And my second question, I guess you've already heard that there's some concern about competition or conflicts with fiber Alaska, our local provider. And I was wondering if you could address that. I think you mentioned that you wouldn't be building fire to home.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, two things. One, competition is actually healthy for telecom. It helps drive down your prices. It helps improve quality of service and performance. So I generally think competition's good. In Cordova, we have multiple carriers there, and it's typically the local carrier that puts forth the extra effort and delivers what people want, and they're the ones that are most successful. And then relative to the grant applications, if there's overlap, it's going to be the higher scoring application that will likely win. And so I've been in communications with Jan and Ella, and I think there's probably ways to minimize the impact of overlap, so that we can both be successful. And then I also think that long-term, you might find other providers want to give service here if they had fiber. So instead of having just one option, maybe you'll have two or three in the future.
Okay.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions for Councilmember Driscoll?
So can you explain a little bit more about the interconnection between it and the cell phone? Because right now, as you probably know, in Gustavus, cell coverage just doesn't happen. So I'm not quite sure how the two mesh together.
So they're different technologies. Just because you have fiber here doesn't necessarily mean you'll have good cellular coverage. Right now, from what I could tell just driving around, you guys have one main cell site by the airport, and it's very short. So you have a couple different compounding issues here with cellular. One is your tree mass and the flatness of the area. And the second is that you don't have the altitude above that for your signal. And then you don't have the capacity to add more cell sites. So right now with the microwave network, there's not enough capacity to go add one at the harbor or down in the national park area because you're limited by the bandwidth. The fiber would alleviate that capacity restraint to where the carriers could more cost effectively add more cell sites to improve service. One of the easy ways to possibly improve service is to make that tower taller. In Yakutat, for example, where we provide cellular currently, our tower is 180 feet tall. I'm pretty sure that tower over here is 80 feet tall, if that. So it could be significantly bigger, and that would drastically improve the service. And then also maybe looking at boosters and working with the providers to do targeted boosters for homes that are hidden behind trees and facilities. Those will significantly improve the coverage. But right now, I think it's a limitation on sites that's impacting your cellular coverage. To that note, we are a strategic partner with AT&T. They only have a couple of them in the state. We service about 9,000 square feet up or square miles up in the South Central. We go from Whittier Valdez to Chenega and Cordova all the way down to Yakutat. And so we would definitely look to foster that with them and support upgrades here if we're successful. But I know today it's probably a capacity issue on the microwave network and then a capital investment constraint on delivering that.
Thank you. I think Councilmember Brian Taylor has his hand up. Brian?
Thank you, and thanks for coming to be here tonight. So I'm pretty interested in this because I also work remotely. I wish I could be in Gustavus tonight, but I'm on a trip for work right now, actually. But mostly my question comes as a kind of idle curiosity, so I hope you will entertain me with this. If you are awarded this grant, does that then position you as the wholesale provider of bandwidth to the market here, where you're then selling bandwidth into our community? I'm trying to understand any potential pros and cons of, say, Byte Networking were to get their Reconnect grant and be the direct access into the community if we then stand to have an economic advantage as far as lower prices into the community from them being the wholesaler versus having to purchase it from you. And I just honestly don't fully understand the market and the economics of that quite enough. So I'm wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Sure. So we have existing submarine lines today. They are expensive. For what we're proposing, it does have a high operational cost. Each location has licensing, power needs, connectivity. We've built that into our business model already. We understand those operational costs. And so we will be able to probably have a more competitive offering wholesale wise because we'll be able to leverage the power of our slightly bigger size and existing infrastructure to reduce like insurance costs, for example. Our line in Cordova to Valdez is $200,000 a year in insurance alone. You start adding on software costs, electrical, and having a submarine line several hundred thousand dollars a year. Your community is not big enough to sustain that. However, with wholesale, working with AT&T, ACS, GCI, and other vendors, that's how we can drive down the costs. And they're going to be very interested in getting service from Juneau back up north because we have connections to Valdez and then Seward. Juneau's got capacity issues as well. There's only two submarine fibers that go north to where all the internet traffic is and all the cellular traffic. Everything down here actually goes to Anchorage before it's processed down to the lower 48. And so by adding extra capacity in Juneau that goes up, we'll be increasing the size of the highway basically so that more cars can go, which makes it more efficient for everyone that's on the highway. So I do think we'll be able to offer competitively priced, cost-effective. On the wholesale side, the goal is to really help cover the cost, not make money. Again, we're a nonprofit, so we don't have anything in our charter or policies that drives making a profit, only that we cover our costs so that it's not a negative cost center or action. So we're firmly confident that we'll be able to do that with the system as a whole, not your community individually, but adding in the sums of all the parts, we believe that we can cover the operational cost. Does that answer your question, Brian?
Yeah, I would like if you could specifically speak to the question about whether or not, so that I guess you're saying that does then position you as the wholesale provider. Did I understand that right?
So yeah, it's a double side. We could be, we could also do an IRU where one company is responsible for the pipe that comes through here. We like the things that are less maintenance and less overhead. So for example, if AT&T wanted to get all the dark fiber and manage it, and then they resell it, it's quite possible that that happens. It could be Fiber Alaska or Byte that wants the fibers that leave here, and then they manage the cross sales. So we don't have any predispositions on who's going to manage the market, but there'll be a line there, and more than likely each community is going to have a primary provider. Is that a better way of dancing around it?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm coming to a little bit more of an understanding. I appreciate you taking the time to explain that for me.
Okay, any other questions? Well, I'll call on Susan to testify next, but any other questions though from council members? Okay, you might stand by in case we need to come back to you for further clarifications, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's really helpful. And for additional public comment and questions, we have Susan Warner with her hand up online. Susan?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I'd like to thank Jeremiah and Cordova Telephone for reaching out to include us in their fast broadband shot to Juneau. I would like to encourage the council to approve this resolution that is non-exclusive in that there's opportunity for any and all providers to apply for funding to bring fast broadband to us. And it seems to me that an appropriate role of the council is to encourage entities who want to build infrastructure to apply for monies to do so, but leave the technical evaluation of the merits of individual proposals up to the granting entities. So again, I think it's an appropriate role for the council to encourage people to try to help us get fast broadband here, a source of fast broadband, in a way that is an encouragement, but not a particular endorsement of this particular plan. So I hope that council members will approve this resolution and encourage Cordova Telephone to, you know, figure out if they can help us become part of a regional plan on a $40 million grant to bring us all up to spec. And if there are other providers such as Byte or Snowcloud or someone else who wants to also apply for this grant, that they be encouraged to do so. So thank you.
Thank you. Do any council members have a question, clarifying question for Susan Warner? Okay, I'm not seeing any more questions come up. Do any other members of the public wish to comment on this resolution? Okay, I'm not seeing any more. So thanks to the public and thanks to Mr. Beckett for his explanations. I certainly learned more about it from this. Okay, so that will bring it back to the council for debate and comment. Council members, does anybody wish to speak up with views on this resolution? Councilmember Owens.
I guess I appreciate the expressions of concern about not doing harm to a local provider, and also Susan's comment that by supporting a grant application is not an endorsement of a particular provider. And I'd like to read the statement, or it was the two sentences from a letter which the mayor sent out to the council, which I think expresses how the council feels about any potential competition. Is I want to clear that we approve of them providing a connection to the regional fiber optic infrastructure. But we aren't approving construction of a local distribution system to homes and businesses that would parallel or compete with that of Fiber Alaska. The last thing we need is a second set of fiber optic cables under our roads. And that was an email on October 10th. And I just wanted to read that into the record because I believe that is what our intention is.
Thank you. Any other council members with comments on this? Yeah, I'm pleased to have the opportunity to support this resolution. It's allows us to take advantage of a regional approach that has an economy of scale that we could never get as a small community ourselves. It was about 2 or 3 years ago when the city of Yakutat proposed a similar project. And at that time, I think that the communities involved, it just looked too overwhelming, and we weren't none of us really had the expertise to carry it out. But in this case, we have a qualified firm, a co-op that has a track record in this and good experience at collecting, drawing on grants. And we have now grants that weren't available a couple of years ago or more when we last looked at this. So it's a great opportunity for us to get fiber, a middle mile fiber optic connection to our community. And I feel confident that in future years, the commercial aspects of it will sort out in a way that improves opportunities for us and even provides opportunities for better cellular service as well as better internet service, and provides opportunities for new businesses to operate here that need this kind of bandwidth availability. And so I'm very pleased to support this. Any other council members wish to comment before we vote? Okay, Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call vote, please?
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Brian Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Motion passes with all members in favor.
Well, thank you. And we'll forward a copy of our completed resolution to Cordova Telephone Cooperative for their use. And we wish you great success as you apply for this grant and as you continue to build out this service. And look forward to having that available. So it's a pleasure to have this opportunity. Okay, so that takes us to item 14, the first of two resolutions to update policies and procedures on submission of grant proposals. And we're updating it because the original ones were done quite a few years ago when the city was very young. And at that time we had ran a lot of our functions with committees, and we had a much different structure. We were a much smaller administration. We had less capability to handle and coordinate grants. And at that time, the council felt that they needed to control grant applications so that they were assured that they conformed to our existing policies and plans for capital projects and the like. Now we're a much more mature government. We have more and better staff to deal with these things. We have a city administrator to ride herd on these. So it was time to update the resolutions to change language, get rid of references to committees that we don't have anymore, and to reset the threshold between small grants and how we handle them versus larger grants to reflect inflation, if nothing else. So I'd like to call on our city administrator to give a summary of the first one, item 13, CY22. We need to do a motion first. So, in fact, I'll go ahead and make that motion in that I move to adopt CY22-20, updating policy and procedure for submission of small grant proposals less than 15,000. So may I have a second on that, please? Okay, did you catch who did the second? Yeah.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve CY22-20, updating policy and procedure on submission of grant proposals and capital requests of 5,001 or greater. That's the old breaking point, by the way. So let's see. We need to read that resolution.
Mike, I'll be glad to read it if you want.
Okay. Councilmember Muscoviac, if you'd read that, please.
A resolution updating City of Gustavus policy and procedure for submission of grant proposals and capital requests to $15,001 or greater. Whereas the Gustavus City Council recognizes the need to update policy and procedure for the submission of grant proposals and capital requests, and whereas the Gustavus City Council last updated its policy and procedure for the submission of grant proposals and capital requests in 2011, and whereas a grant proposal or capital request for a large project or purchase requires a documented planning process that is more formal and extensive than that required for small grant proposals of under $15,001. And whereas this policy and procedure document pertaining to the submission of grant proposals needs revision to reflect current practices, policies, and procedures. And since the threshold for small grants is being increased to $15,000, and whereas this policy and procedure has been recently under discussion by the city administrator, the mayor, and other staff, and has been published since December 17, 2011. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Gustavus City Council updates the policy and procedures for the submission of grant proposals and capital requests as attached.
Thank you. And by the way, I noticed that in our packet, I think we're at least on our cheat sheet, it read the way that the policy that we're updating was 5,001 or greater, and we're changing that to 15,001 or greater. So this is for the larger amounts, and the one that we'll address next is for small grants. So there's a little difference in the way that it was titled, as the title appears in the packet versus what we're actually the title on the actual resolution. But we're talking about the larger grants. Okay. Do any members of the public have any question or any comments on this item, on this resolution? Okay, I'm not seeing any members of the public with comments, so we'll close the public comment. Do any council members wish to comment on this item? I know we've looked at these in work sessions, and so people are fairly familiar with it. Okay, then Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call vote, please, on resolution CY22-20.
Councilmember Muscoviac?
Yes.
Councilmember Brian Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Motion passes with all members in favor.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to 15, and this one is what was throwing me a little bit was the resolution numbers are in the opposite order that they appear here. So this is resolution CY22-19, a resolution updating policy and procedure on submission of small grant proposals less than 15,001. And so may we have a motion, please, from Vice Mayor Bishop.
Yeah, I move to adopt CY22-19, updating policy and procedure on submission of grant proposals and capital requests less than $15,001.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to adopt CY22-19, updating policy and procedure on submission of grant proposals and capital requests of 5,000 or greater. And which was the old limit. That's what we are updating to the new one too. I know it seems a little confusing. I will go ahead and read this resolution. It's short. Resolution CY22-19, a resolution updating City of Gustavus policy and procedures for submission of small grant proposals, now less than $15,001. Whereas the Gustavus City Council recognizes the need to update policy and procedure for the submission of small grant proposals, parentheses, less than $15,001. And whereas the City of Gustavus needs a streamlined procedure for smaller grant proposals, not requiring the level of planning and documentation required for larger grants. And whereas this policy and procedure has been recently under discussion by the city administrator and various department staff regarding both current threshold and in order to encourage department staff to apply for grants for their programs and other needs. And since the current ordinance has been published since December 17, 2010, now therefore be it resolved that the City of Gustavus Council updates the policy and procedure for the submission of small grant proposals to less than $15,001 as attached, and that full policy and procedure was attached. We don't need to read the whole policy. I meant to call on the city administrator to comment on this. Did you want to add anything to this?
No, basically it was to tidy up in the former one, to tidy up the references to committees as well as raise the threshold to meet the threshold being raised for the small grant proposals. And to in the small grant proposals to also they don't have to answer all three of the questions every year if it's a recurring grant. Like if it's like the public library assistance grant and it has the same mission and the same outcomes and the same allowances for expenditures every year, then they just need to describe, you know, maybe their budget and a couple other things as because it's a matter of course and just putting in every year. So it's just going to reduce the paperwork and the time involved with everybody, all of us. Basically. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. We asked for public comment. Okay, I just want to make sure I'm staying on track here. Do any council members wish to comment on this or ask any questions of the city administrator regarding this resolution and the policy that's attached? Okay, I'm not seeing any hands coming up, so maybe it's pretty straightforward. Madam Clerk, a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Councilmember Brian Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Motion passes with all members in favor.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that moves us on to item 16, to approve the scoping document for the septage storage facility. This is, I think you're all aware, we had some discussion on it earlier in the meeting, is a project to move, to provide local septage storage such that a pumping committee, a pumping firm in Juneau could bring over their small pumper and pump into a storage facility during over several days between ferries, and then send their small pumper back probably with the load in it too, but fill up a storage tank here, and then they could bring over the big truck and quickly load it while the ferry is in port by pumping out of the storage tanks, which would be located at the DRC or one of the properties right around the DRC, so that they could then get their pumper back on the ferry and back to Juneau in one day, making it possible for them to provide services here that have been difficult to sustain without that storage capability. And it's a solution that was suggested by the Juneau Pumping Service. I'd like to begin with I'll make the motion here in that I move to approve the scoping document for the septage storage facility. And that scoping document is in the packet and describes the project that we would proceed to develop to purchase and install those storage tanks.
I'll second that.
Okay, thank you. So it's been moved and seconded to approve the scoping document for the septage storage facility. Do any members of the public have comment on this proposed project adopting the scoping form? Okay, there's been a lot of interest in septage, but nobody's commenting on it. So, okay, then we'll do any. Let's see. I guess we've got a motion. Do any members of the council wish to comment on approval of the scoping document for this project? Councilmember Driscoll.
So, when I look through it to see what are the community problems and needs that it addresses, I'm just thinking of one of the septic needs, shall we say, of the community is for people who have non-septic tanks. So there's a significant, I think, proportion of places in Gustavus that have outhouses or honey buckets. And I know that there's been some comment that there's sometimes issues with that stuff, shall we say, being put into the outhouse by the dock. And I'm wondering if this system could address that need as well as for people who don't have septic systems where they go into septic tanks, but they're actually some alternative system. Can this project help them as well?
I'd have to say it's not designed for that. We can pump, this would be a service that we could pump our vault toilets that we have both at the park here and at the beach park at the down by the dock. So anything that the pumping service can pump would be could perhaps use this service. So I suppose if somebody has a storage associated with their, say, a composting outhouse system or something, and they wish it pumped, and if it's reachable by a pumping truck, they could order the pumping service and would presumably be charged according to the volume that is pumped. So it wasn't something that we had thought about, but it's, again, if it's pumpable, I would expect it could be done. Of course, many people have a, you know, compost it so they don't need to pump it. But so that's about the best I can do in answering that. If it's pumpable, then it would be possible, I would think.
Okay, thank you.
Serve it. But we're probably not going to have them go down and dump it directly in the tank because it hadn't been pumped and metered, and we're not, and the service would be charging the homeowner for what they pump. So that's why I say if it's pumpable, perhaps it could be done.
And then will this be pumping the city's facilities as well?
Yes. Okay. Any other questions from council members on this scoping document? Describes the project that we hope will enable us to improve the availability of pumping service here, for which there's a clear need. Okay, then if no objections, we'll go to a vote. Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Councilmember Brian Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Did I get everybody? I'm doing it from scratch because I don't. Thank you, Councilmember Makoviak.
Yeah.
Okay. Motion passes with all members in favor.
Okay. Thank you. I think I voted. I don't remember. Okay. That moves us on to a related item, item 17. And in a way, this is sort of a housekeeping thing within our code, but it's really more than that. This is related to the septage thing, and the issue that I wanted to address here is that we are taking on a new service, a new function within the city that we did not have to provide this septage service. That we did not have provided for in our code. And governments in the United States derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And so we can't just charge off and do some new service without having it authorized in our code through a public process. And that's the public approval that allows us to take on a new service. And we are very careful here about taking on new services because there's often cost involved. And in fact, in this case, there's the cost of buying these tanks and installing them for the septic storage. so we have brought forward an ordinance that we introduced tonight and would schedule for public hearing at the November 10 meeting to authorize the city to provide these limited septage storage services. So that's what this piece is about. And so we need a motion to introduce ordinance FY 23-07, providing for the amendment of city ordinance Title VI, City Departments and Contracted Services, Section 03.040, Services Provided. And we're adding this service under the disposal and recycling, under our waste disposal and recycling code item, but it's a new function that wasn't in that code, wasn't authorized in the code before. May I have a motion, please, from Council Member Lewis?
I move to approve the introduction of FY23-07, providing for the amendment of City Ordinance Title VI, City Departments and Contracted Services, Section 03.040, Services Provided, with a public hearing scheduled for 11/10/2022.
Okay, do I have a second, please?
I'll second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the introduction of FY23-07, providing for the amendment of City Ordinance Title VI, City Departments and Contracted Services, Section 03.040, Services Provided, with a public hearing scheduled for November 10, 2022. Do any members of the public wish to comment on the introduction of this? And recall that we will have a public hearing on the merits of it next month. So this is a public, this is just to introduce it so the public's aware that we are taking on this new function, or we are proposing to do it. They will have an opportunity to comment if they wish next month. So this is to the motion to introduce it for and schedule for public hearing. Any members of the public wish to comment? Okay, I'm seeing no hands coming up. Do any council members wish to comment on this? To clear what we are doing here. Okay, I guess we're okay then with introducing it. Madam Clerk, may we have roll call vote, please?
Alrighty. Actually, I have a system now. Councilmember Driscoll.
Yes.
Councilmember Brian Taylor.
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis.
Yes.
Mayor Taylor.
Yes.
Councilmember Owens.
Yes.
Vice Mayor Bishop.
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak.
Yes.
Okay, motion passes with all members in favor.
Thank you. Okay, we have two more items that are related to this coming up, but together they introduce an NCO to fund this project per the amount recommended, or the amount called for in the scoping document, that is $30,000. So the next, it happens to be a two-step process, and our former treasurer, Phoebe Vanslow, outlined the need for the two steps. And we are using funding from the American Rescue Plan, which we have received as income in the operating budget. And so the second of these two will take that money from the American Rescue Plan has been appropriated to our general operating budget as income. What we are now need to do, since we want to spend $30,000 from the American Rescue Plan funding, which can be used for health and safety items, which this is, and we want to reappropriate that to the capital project. So that means we are reducing, in the second item, we will reduce the income from the American Rescue Plan that's going into our operating budget, and instead appropriate $30,000 of it to the capital project. And there are a couple of other adjustments on that one too that just happen to be other monies that have come in that we're including in that. And then we are adding $30,000, because the money from the American Rescue Plan really lives in our checking account right now. We are moving it from the checking account to the capital project for the storage. And that's the first one of these two. So I know that sounds a little, but it's just essentially a two-step process to do that. So we need to start with a motion for the first of the two. So this is item 18, FY23-08 NCO, a non-code ordinance, Capital Project Funding 2023 Introduction with Public Hearing 11-14-22. And Councilmember Muscoviac has a motion for us to get us started.
I move to approve the introduction of FY23-08 NCO Capital Project Funding 2023 with a public hearing scheduled for November 14, 2022.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Councilmember okay. Owens will thank you for your second, and also to the vice mayor too. But okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the introduction of FY23. Let's see, what's our number here? -08 NCO capital project funding. 2023 with public hearing scheduled for 11-14-2022. Do any members of the public wish to comment on this NCO? Okay, I'm not seeing any. So do any council members wish to comment on this NCO, this first half of our transfer? Okay, Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call vote, please?
Councilmember Muscoviac?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Councilmember Brian Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Motion passes with all members in favor.
Okay, thank you. That moves us to item 19, the departmental budgets introduction. This is the other half that we've, I think I've already described enough. So Councilmember Bishop, Vice Mayor Bishop has a motion for us, please.
Yeah, I move to approve the introduction of FY23-09 NCO departmental budgets with a public hearing scheduled for 11-14-2022.
Thank you. A second, please.
I second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the introduction of FY23-09 NCO departmental budgets with a public hearing scheduled for 11-14-2022. Do any members of the public wish to comment on this NCO introduction? We will have public hearing next month. Okay, seeing none, do any council members wish to comment on this? Okay, Madam Clerk, a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Brian Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Councilmember Muscoviac?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Motion passes with all members in favor.
Okay, thank you. And that concludes the new business, takes us to city council reports. And the first one is item 20, the mayor's report. And I put a copy of that report in your packet. So I'll just hit some highlights. We were pretty much pretty heavily involved in the construction of the Grandpa's Farm Road Bridge in September, and due to a tremendous effort by Glacier Bay Construction, our contractor on this, the bridge is completed. And they there's a photo of it there in your packet. It's a this was a $535,000 project. The first project within Alaska to be completed with funding from the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act. And so we were very fortunate that Fish and Wildlife Service wanted to fund this project to get rid of the old culvert there. There was a fish passage barrier and help us deal with the failing culvert and embankment over the stream there and replace it with a modern timber bridge that should serve both the fish and the drivers of Gustavus for many decades to come. And they dealt with an issue. You might notice the rock on the left side of the north end of the bridge there, well, left side from this angle. They came up with small change order to deal with drainage with water running down Grandpa's farm road towards the bridge so it wouldn't pool against the bridge and developed a discharge path there. Fish and Wildlife will be here to do a final inspection on it, I think Thursday. We've sent them photos and so forth. And if there's anything they want us to tweak on the way we've got the stream done or something, Glacier Bay Construction is prepared to do that. But we think we got it pretty close to what they wanted, and we should have vegetation growing back up by next summer. It should start looking a lot greener where you see the core fabric there on the banks, and it'll return to a more natural looking scene there. And I particularly really like the way the designers routed the stream through the site. It's a much improved stream channel from what the original one was, if you may remember. I do want to thank the neighbors, particularly Kathy Strebler, Hank Lentfer, Anya Meyer, who graciously permitted us to do a construction detour across their properties. Thanks to Paul Barnes and Melissa Sinek for enduring the construction on the edge of their lot. We had heavy equipment on their property and so forth to get this stream rebuilt. Thanks to Western Wood Structures of Tualatin, Oregon for the bridge package manufacturing. And they had to hustle to get it done and managed to do it with very tight supply chains and high wood and steel costs that part of the supply chain challenges that everybody has faced and played out here on this bridge, but especially thanks to Glacier Bay Construction for bidding the project and making it possible to get it done. This is the seventh such bridge they've done for us over the last few years. And I'd also note that I'd like to express my gratitude to Senator Lisa Murkowski for her support of the bipartisan infrastructure bill that funded this project. And Lisa has worked hard with communities and many meetings in Alaska to help small communities like ours make the most of the availability of infrastructure funds. So I appreciate that. So I hope you'll get a chance to drive. If you haven't seen the bridge yet, driven over it, by all means, drive out to Grandpa's Farm Road and have a look. Three months ago, we, at the request of a number of members of the public who used the softball field informally next to the post office on the DOT's airport lease lot there, we were informed by the airport that despite the fact that that softball field had been in use for a decade or probably more, that we were supposed to have a permit for that. And the softball users came to the city and say, gee, we don't know how to do this permit and we'd have to pay for it and all that stuff. And they asked our help. So we agreed to go ahead and file for a permit on the behalf of the softball users. And I reported on this 3 months ago when we first did it. And that permit is still grinding in the process. I checked with the airport lease person just a week ago, and she said they're still working on the determination that they have to do with FAA for whether or not softball is allowed on their lease lots. Maybe they're worried about hitting airplanes or something, I don't know. And there's an environmental section that has to sign off it and all that bureaucracy, but eventually they'll work through it and we should get that permit. And my understanding is that they don't charge the municipality for it. So we asked for a 10-year permit. So maybe that'll take care of it for a while and we'll be able to play softball there without violating the permit requirements. So we'll continue to follow up and get that. It should be ready by softball season, I'd hope. If not, that's a real, it's really saying something about the bureaucracy if we can't do it by then. The airport ditch cleaning, we've continued to press DOT to clean both ditches on the both the east side and west side of the airport. Now that they've done a lot of sampling to characterize PFAS concentrations in the water and in the sediments, so they know what those concentrations are and they can determine what they have to do to where they can clean the ditch and where they have to take special measures to deal with any contamination that exceeds the applicable limits. And I hadn't been getting a response from the contact at DOT, and it's not our local manager. He's supportive of it. And so I sent an email to the DOT commissioner on October 3 asking for assistance on that. And I have informal information coming from the local airport manager, Jeff Jarvis, that in fact, they are moving forward on it now. And so we should have a plan to get that cleaned. Cleaning those ditches, in my view, is essential to making our flood control systems work that we spent a lot of time on. All the ditching along Wilson Road and the barriers we put in place up at the gravel pits, the work on the big culvert up there. We know that we will probably get some over, well, that system has to work to divert as much water as we can down the east side of the airport. So the cleaning, they already did 2/3 or more of that along the airport side. Has been helpful already, but they need to finish that so that that side, so the water will flow and discharge to tidewater properly there. And on the west side, there's been no cleaning and we need that side to be cleaned up so that if we do get overflow from the gravel pits that runs, that is not captured in the east side system and runs down Wilson Road, that it can get into our new ditches on Wilson Road and then into the airport ditch on this side of the airport, and then eventually through Glenn's ditch to Tidewater. So I've been assured that they are indeed working on a plan to get that cleaned, and I think the sooner the better. You know, we still have our position open for applicants for the city treasurer, and I'm hoping that we'll soon be able to have a recommendation for a hire on that position. So, but it's still open at this point. We've talked about John Barry doing public works project management under contract to us, as our city administrator pointed out. We've talked about septage handling. And I just have to say, in summary of this last year, it's been a pretty productive year. We got a lot of good projects done with the help of a supportive council and a very supportive and dedicated staff that's really made it possible. Despite the trials of the pandemic, we managed to keep city services going and complete a lot of good work. And having the fact that the council authorized more hours for our staff, full-time for our city administrator, more hours for our librarians so they can run increased services there. More hours for our administrative staff here has meant we can be open on Fridays, which we never were before. We're just open 4 days a week. Now we're 5 days a week, a 20% increase. And that's meant better service for the public. Lots of people come in to vote or pay their taxes or get vote stickers and all that on Friday. So I really appreciate the extra funding that the council provided last year that made those things possible. And finally, I'd like to mention my appreciation for the many volunteers who serve the city at our fire department, at the library, at the community chest. People have come to help out at Salmon River Park to spruce it up for the 4th of July, mow the grass and things like that. The summer readers at the library who planted flowers at the library and made that showy. And all those volunteers care so much for our community and make it the kind of community that we all love to live in. So in conclusion, I'm thankful for our hardworking staff, our volunteers, and the council for its guidance and support in this council year. Together, we've moved our city forward. So that's my report. Any questions on what we've been working on over the last year or the last month? Council Member Driscoll, yes. So
first I have to say, I find it extremely impressive to see all the stuff that's been done. And I'm just curious as to what happens to this report? How does this get disseminated to the community as a whole?
Oh, they'll put it in the trash, actually. Actually, it's in the packet, but they're also posted on the website each month. So there's the clerk posts. Any comments on that, Madam Clerk, about how you do that?
Yeah, I can answer that. So they are in the packet. They are also on our website. The mayor's report can be found under the council members section, and then all the administrative reports from the different departments are under the administrative section. And then they are also posted in all three of the bulletin boards that I maintain. There's one at the post office, there's one at the library, and there's one here at City Hall.
Could I make a suggestion that they get emailed as part of the city news? I know I get, like, when Paul writes one on the DRC, we get his report. I get it in my email. But I've realized I've never gotten an email from the mayor report. And I think that is a great summary. And after having listened to a lot of the questions at the candidate forum, it seems that one of the underlying themes was people want more information and they want to know what's happening. And I think that this would be a really easy way to, you know, give people more information. You've already got it written, and to put it out into the email. And then I would be able to, people could read it at their leisure. And it would be, I think, a way to, you know, promote ourselves with more outreach if it came in the email on that listserv that you're already using for city correspondence.
Yeah, that's definitely something to think about, and I'd be happy to talk with you more about that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? No, we're coming up on 10 o'clock, but we're about done here, so almost. Do any council members who are working on any particular project wish to make a report on that? It's an opportunity if you have something you want to say about something you're working on.
Yeah, Mike, can I say something here?
You may, Councilmember Muscoviac.
Yeah, several weeks ago, I attended the Outdoor Economy Conference in Haines, and I met there with Julius Adelson, and he's a Department of Transportation's coordinator for paths and things. And I told him what we were hoping to do in Gustavus, and he was very interested and very supportive of it. I subsequently emailed him our scoping document, as well as some other documents we had, such as the Safe Routes to School proposal and Federal Lands Access Program proposal. He said that he would pass those on to a couple of planners, and I hadn't heard back from them. I gave them a couple of weeks to look over things. So I tried to contact them today, and one of the planners no longer is employed at the Department of Transportation. The other one is there, and I'll just keep pursuing this. And if anybody in the council has any questions, I'll be glad to chat with them. And I appreciate your support for this. And if Lisa Murkowski is here, maybe we can get a picture of her on a bicycle.
Okay, it's a deal. Thanks, Jim, and thanks for working on the bike path. This is it's a big project, and I'm really pleased to have Jim working to sort of bird dog it. City administrator has a comment here.
So, Jim, it might be prudent to put to look up that intake assessment thing that I filled out for the Good River Bridge. The other program that's part of that is the non-regular transport mode. It's not, you know, roads and bridges. It's for things like the bike path. And so I don't know if you're after planning money exactly, but you might want to consider going in and just detailing that as a notice of intent to apply, or ask the guy from DOT if he'd suggest you doing that.
I'll come by City Hall and chat with you sometime this week, okay?
Councilmember Driscoll.
I'm curious if there, I think it's a great project and I love the concept of it. And I'm curious though, if there is a map that shows what the proposed route of this bike path is.
It's in the, it's part of the scoping document, and we, you know, Karen can get you that, or I can email it to you.
Yeah, great. I've looked and I've seen a description, but I haven't seen a map that shows it. And so if you have a copy of that, I would love an email that shows a copy of the map. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we'll get it to you.
Airport along the asphalt road to the park boundary, and then also down Dock Road to the beach. So that's essentially what the locations for people wondering. But yeah, look at the scoping document that Jim did up and have that detail. Okay, another opportunity for council questions or comments. Any additional questions or comments on something we didn't have on the agenda, something you wanted to chat about? Councilmember Lewis.
I just have a quick follow-up question. Are the scoping documents on our website, or are they in a distinct place, or are they just kind of buried in the packet? Or if people want to go through and look at, find a scoping document.
Well, I'll have to plead guilty on not doing that. I think that a lot of them live on various computers and so forth, but they are, well, they are in the packets at the time they are approved. We could look at another way of displaying them. Madam Clerk, do you have any idea on that? Or
the treasurer has been the traditional keeper of all the scoping documents. And I have started my own file just throughout our transitions lately. But there is no place on our website except for the packets.
Might be something we could look into. Councilmember Owens, were you wanting to say something?
I said, huh. I've located those scoping documents. I thought there was a capital improvement plan place on the website that I've gone through to look these things up. Like the most recent capital improvement plan has the scoping documents. I'll see if I can find it, and I'll send it to you, and maybe we can make sure that it's actually there, and I didn't imagine it.
We have a web designer on the council now who could probably advise us on how to do that well. Okay. Any other council comments on the non-agenda item of any kind? Okay, that brings us to our last opportunity for public comment on non-agenda items. I think you recall the drill on that one. Do any members of the public have a comment on a non-agenda item before we close? Okay, I'm not seeing more hands come up. We had good comments the first time around. So with that, I believe we're ready to adjourn at 9:50 p.m. Thank you all for tuning in and participating in our meeting.